the streets. The concrete and the clay beneath my feet begin to crumble. Matt Plaza with Concrete and Clay there. Now, Professor Fred Lothian is an engineer and he's an expert on concrete. He loves looking at it. He loves talking about it. And even though he knows that other people want to run a mile when he starts banging on about the advantages of reinforced concrete, he just can't help himself. He's 69. His wife is dead. And to be honest, this man is lonely. He is the irascible centre of a very poignant and sometimes funny new novel called Extinctions. It's by the Perth writer Josephine Wilson, who's also a teacher of creative writing, art and design, and she joins you and me right now. Hi, Josephine.
Hi, Michael.
How did this come about, this book? Does it have origins in some dimension of your own life?
I would say that the answer is yes. It has many, many origins. Can you have many origins?
Yes,
I think that's
you can.
One of the questions of my book. Is there such a thing as one origin or many origins? And any creative project, I think, comes from many places. And my book emerges from my background as a person and probably a family background and experiences of going through issues to do with aging with, I suppose, myself, but more so my parents, the death of my parents, and also my long interest in literature and the arts and in the things that many realms of the arts and literature and design. And I suppose the book is a way to fashion and make something of those, all those things, those many origins, something tangible that makes sense of what I've sometimes felt to be my decentered interest in too many things.
Mm. All right. Well, let's try and find a centre to your decentered interests. Perhaps if we go into the story, Josephine, a bit. So it takes place over a period of just 5 days in January 2006. So we're in Western Australia, and your central character is this chap, Frederick Lothian, who's a pretty cranky retired professor of engineering. I suppose the first question is, he's only 69. What's he doing living in a retirement village? He's in St. Sylvan's retirement village. Why is he there?
Because I think what's happened, what I realised when my parents began to age themselves, and they are not the same generation as Frederick Lothian, they are a different type of person completely, so this is not autobiographical like that. I realised that a lot of people were moving into these upmarket places that don't really market themselves as aged care centres, they're more villages, and they offer all kinds of lifestyle options with a kind of level of care and also a narrative of transition to high, medium, and then higher care, and then dot, dot, dot. And so I think the point is not so much that he is in an old people's home, but that he is experiencing this new way of living older age. And he, being an irascible type, sees that this is just a ruse and that there's a pit underneath his feet that he will eventually be dropped into, and no amount of nice design and landscaping can hide that from him. And he isn't happy where he is, but he's given up the family home, he's sold the big house, or he's rented out the big house, he is alone with his things, and he is a very lonely man. But he is, I think it's important to understand that kind of new space of transition that a lot of older people are offered now. Mm-hmm. Can they afford it?
It's a little grim that you talk about the pit into which he and all of us will fall, because after we talk to you, we're going to talk about Botticelli's image of the Inferno, Dante's Inferno, you know, which is
marvelous,
which is a giant pit. So everything's connected to everything else, as it so often is here on Books and Arts. So let's just unpack Fred's psychology a bit more. So he knows what it takes to hold up a bridge, and he loves to ponder the Latin or Greek origin of a word. He's always sort of parsing language as it passes him by, but he's less skillful at relating to other people.
Yes, I was trying to capture or represent a certain kind of, I think, a certain kind of man, a certain way of being that I think many men of that older generation found themselves in, which is that they I remember going to university when I first went to university at Murdoch University. There was a lot of women were coming in their 40s to do women's studies, and they were emerging probably in that kind of feminist wave to kind of try and find themselves and find themselves out of that child rearing role. And I think it's I'm trying to honour that memory as well, and also to try and explore the psychology or the how a man like that comes to be, and the issues of guilt and issues of he's had his head in the sand. And so the book, while it's set in the present in a very short period of time, it moves back and it kind of places the reader back in the events that he is forced to remember that are returning to him during this very intense period of time where he sees his own culpability and the horrendous actions, I think. I mean, horrendous in a kind of minor register sometimes, and not so minor, that he's endured as a man, or lived out as a man, as a husband, as a father of children. And I think it's about him trying. It offers the reader the idea: is there hope? Can you change? And I think that's what I was trying to do in the book.
Yeah, he knows he's a monster. That's the word he uses. He knows he's a monster. Yes. And when we say he's a monster, I mean, it's not that he's killed people and he's done shocking things. He's just, there's just a part of him that's never grown or lived or been in the sunshine.
Well, the reader comes to understand his background, and he's transcended a very small village background in England where his father and his grandfather worked in a factory to make tanks in Lincoln. And he himself experiences himself as a kind of tank, as a kind of reinforced space. And he feels, he's terrified, I think, of men. He's terrified of anger. And he feels he's come to Australia he's escaped all of that, but yet he hasn't escaped all of that. And I think that's another point of the book.
I've known people like Fred. In fact, I've known academics like Fred. And the world treated them as though they were arrogant. But sometimes those apparently arrogant people are actually shy.
Well, I think you get that. I think there's a strong sense of empathy, I hope, even though he's a loathsome man in so many of his actions. And we see that because I'm trying to represent it in the third person, but in a kind of unreliable interiority. So the reader goes, oh, my God, does he really think that? And so we come to see that while he is culpable in so many ways, he is also very human, and he also has a kind of yearning, I think, to escape or to, you know, he's kind of forced backwards through his encounters. And I think I'm not trying to say that he has no humanity, certainly.
No, no, no. In fact, as he approaches the last decade of his life, he's looking for, a way out, I guess. Let's talk about what happens. The lady next door, she's in the
Jan.
Jan is in the next door room with her. Is it budgies she's got?
She has budgies.
Budgies, that's
right. He hates, and Frederick loathes budgerigars.
That's right.
He's decided he will never get to know this woman because she has these dreadful budgerigars. And she's in the next unit adjacent to him, and he's forced to encounter her.
Well, she's quite friendly. I mean, and she's got that kind of friendliness that he's able to construct as sort of interfering.
Nosy. Every time he reaches for a stereotype, she destroys it. And I think that's the point. And when I was thinking about writing this book and the character of Jan was emerging, I was really aware that she could teeter between kind of a stereotypical good person who's there to rescue the man and rescue old Fred. And in fact, she actually then says, well, I'm not here to do that, Fred. I'm not some sort of salvation for you. So she is very blunt, and she's very insightful, and she sees him for what he is. And she challenges him in a very direct way, I think, to think about connectivity, because so much of the book, the concrete, the references and the images in the book, there's lots of photographs in the book of constructed spaces, famous buildings, famous furniture, because Fred loves modernist, well-made furniture, simple design, the Brewer chair. So much in the book is about connection and connectivity in a structural sense, but it's also about that I think, at another level, how we have to connect regardless. And we can connect differently in families. And I was very, very concerned to write a book that was not about a kind of biological family.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice irony of the book. So he can build up a bridge. He can construct a bridge that would connect the two sides of a canyon, but he's unable to build the kind of emotional bridges that would connect two people. We're talking to Josephine Wilson this morning. She's a Perth writer, and she's written a book that features Professor Fred Lothian, who is in a retirement village at the age of 69. His wife is dead, and he's just having trouble relating to, well, the mass of humanity, really. He's lived in a kind of managed world of an academic who's focused on teaching engineering, and suddenly he's got to get out in the real world and actually deal with the rest of us. So he's got two children. He's very remote from his son, Callum, who suffered a severe brain injury in a car accident, and he doesn't deal with that in a way that's admirable at all.
No, he doesn't.
The other child he has is Caroline, who he's adopted, and this is a very interesting sort of sub-theme of the book. She's a stolen generation girl. Can you talk to me about what it was that drew you to that theme? She's a fair-skinned Aborigine, and she's got a whole take on how she became a member of this family.
Yeah, she is in her 30s, Caroline, and she was very close to her mother and not so close to her father. Her mother, not her birth mother, her adoptive mother. And this came about, well, there's a number of reasons why. Some of them are personal, as in to do with my background and my experience as a mother of an adopted child, and also to do, and a biological child, but also to do with an encounter with a girl who lived next door to me when I was growing up, who this story was influenced by that. But also I was very interested in the families that I knew of through my school, not knew well, but I knew they're very well-meaning families, middle-class families who had adopted Aboriginal children. And the difficult trajectory that they had. And I placed this not in that kind of 30s, 40s, kind of 50s stolen generation, but at a time where the parents believe that they are liberal, do-good people. They're intellect, they're educated, they think they're doing the right thing. And Fred is informed by a kind of global idea of identity that we're all the same, we just have to treat everybody the same, doesn't matter what colour you are. So, you know, they're good people.
But Justin, his view on this is not unadmirable. He has a kind of universal brotherhood and sisterhood
Not exactly. But what I was trying to tease out was, from the point of view of Carolyn, the character, this is at a price of the erasure of her own identity and her own difference. And he gets really angry at his wife because Martha goes back to study, and Martha is very deeply enmeshed in her daughter's issues around identity and Aboriginal history. And there's a part in the book where we see Martha say that as almost like the turret turned, and she became not the rescuer, the salvation of a child, but actually somebody who had perpetrated a theft. And so historically, for her, as the white mother of an adopted child who is Indigenous, she experiences herself very differently. And the daughter, of course, begins to experience herself very differently in the historical reality of a changing Australia. And so that kind of melting pot discourse, if you like, or language around the idea we're all the same, often masks for kids who are adopted, particularly from internationally or from a different cultural race, that whole kind of difference, which they feel just as an existential moment of visibility, where they walk down the street, that they look at the mother, they look at the father, and they look at the child, and there's a big question mark. Mm. So it's about, I was trying to explore or examine or offer something about that for the reader as well to think about, and to perhaps think about for themselves about how they feel, and also just for those children who were taken and who did grow up in that very difficult space.
Well, Josephine, it is exactly the kind of novel that makes you think about life, the universe and everything, it's constantly throwing you back on your own experience and thinking, yeah, I need to examine why I think those things or how the world is working around me. It's very enjoyable. And as I say, it's pretty funny. Josephine, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
It's been good to meet you. Josephine Wilson, and her book is called Extinctions, and it's published by UWA Publishing. Across Australia, this is RN. You're listening to Books and Arts.